It's back, my libido. And how did I ever live without it? I've been away almost the whole week with my new gig, and that's not going to change much for the next month. So dating, sex, parenting, all kind of largely been put on hold. Just now, when my desire to do all of the above has gone through the roof. It's my unconventional life. For a while, crocodile. I went to the woods because I wanted to live deliberately, to front only the essential facts of life, and see if I could not learn what it had to teach, and not when I came to die, discover that I had not lived. My name is Nigel McGuinness, and this is My Unconventional Life. It's a podcast, it's a journal, and in a way, it is kind of a personal ad. But most of all, it's about navigating the treacherous waters of love, sex, and relationships in 2017. Sponsored by absolutely no one. Every week, I detail my own journey and discuss my own untraditional views and aspirations in that world. Whatever the topic, whoever the guest, it all comes back to one question. How do we best find and express love in 2017? Thing about not knowing what you've got until it's gone. For me, I didn't know what I'd lost until I got it back. Fuck me. It's not just a physical thing either. It's just as much mental. Something that seems so innate and a thought in your mind that you can control is actually, it seems, controlled largely by testosterone. And I'm certain that this is why it's hard to understand why women stop wanting to have sex with partners that they otherwise love completely. And that perhaps there's a drug, maybe even testosterone itself, that would change that immediately. Who knows? What I do know is that my libido seems to be back in spades after having been on the testosterone replacement cream for about a week now. And if I loved girls before, well, now there's almost a visceral reaction to them. What can I say? There's been spates of flirtation over the last week in my life, but nothing in the real physical world, at least as of this recording. If I continue to travel like this, it could take some major adjustments to avoid another period of largely celibacy. Ah, the irony. I can't think of anything else relevant to say. Oh God, I hope the testosterone isn't melting my brain. Oh yeah, I'm actually back in Tampa as I tape this, where I used to live before Los Angeles, and it's brought memories flooding back, all about relationships and the girls that I was in them with. And when I first moved to Florida, I was in a committed relationship with a girl from Europe that, despite our best efforts, as I'd predicted, was actually impossible to make work. I then tried dating casually with a brief period, you could say, where I was consensually non-monogamous, even if I didn't use the label or really discuss details of seeing anyone else with people, because most of the time, I don't think I was, if that makes sense. But then I met my ex-girlfriend, made a decision that I wanted to see her exclusively after a couple of months, was diagnosed with hepatitis, and then, of course, the relationship took on a whole new dimension, and we were together for about 4 years, with a lot of wonderful experiences. Nonetheless, if I try to find any lessons or answers from the time period of my life when I was in Florida, I think it's that deep down, I'm really not monogamous, but I love girls deeply when I'm with them. On the podcast this week, my good friend Crow from the Magic Castle in Hollywood. Lovely fella, but as you'll find out from the interview, not the vanilla monogamous heterosexual I had him pegged as. Here you go. It's Monday night, we are in the heart of Hollywood, and I'm with one of my best magician buddies, Crow.
Hey,
How are you, my friend?
Hey, I'm good. Welcome to Casa del Crow.
Well, thank you. It's actually the second or third time I've been here. Very nice, swanky studio or apartment. And like I said, not far from Hollywood Boulevard, not far from the Magic Castle as well, where we've spent many a good hour. But we're not here to talk about magic tonight. We're here to talk about love.
Man, this is a first for me.
Well, it's funny because we were at the castle the other night and we were talking about how you've been listening to my podcast.
Yeah.
Which was cool. It always sort of pops me when one of my friends says, oh, I've been listening to your podcast. And it's always good to sort of hear their opinion of it.
Yeah.
And more so than that, though, you sort of told me how you kind of identified with some of the things that I've been talking about.
Yeah, there's a lot that I identified. I love the podcast, by the way. I love the one that you did with your sister, like talking to your sister about your life.
That bitch.
Have I met her before?
I don't think so. No, she never came to the castle. Mom came before.
Yeah, I met your mom, and she's a wonderful person. I love her. She's awesome. But talking to your sister about it was awesome because normally that's something most people wouldn't do.
Yeah.
But that's what made me kind of sit there and go like, oh, this is something that I can relate to in a way. Not about like talking about my sister about sex or anything, but basically this idea that like when you get somebody who's close to you that opens that door for themselves and says, this is who I am, this is what I do, then it makes you kind of explore yourself and it makes you think like, what am I doing? Like, who am I and what do I own of myself?
Right.
And so over the past like year or so, I've had this rule to myself of basically own your shit. And owning your shit is whatever you appreciate about yourself or whatever you love, whether somebody thinks it's weird, somebody thinks it's quote unquote taboo or so, own it. Just enjoy the hell out of it. And and listening to your podcast kind of helped me own it even more. So
that's fantastic. Because to me, one of the realizations I had this year is that I love girls.
Yeah.
Like, David Deida wrote a book called The Way of the Superior Man, and Rachel, one of my parenting partners, told me to read it. It's about like, sort of re-identifying or re-acclimatizing yourself with your masculine side.
Yeah.
Because the way things went, in the 50s, guys were sort of like madmen. They were way, way on the right. They were sort of alpha males and they couldn't cry and they couldn't be in touch with that feminine side. And then in the 60s and 70s, free love ruled and guys went in the opposite direction. They had to be effeminate. And it got to a stage where men lost a lot of that masculinity. And so he talks in this book about finding almost a happy medium and understanding that men and women are designed to be different.
You know,
we're designed to be equal, but different, you know? And so it's about being more of an alpha without being an asshole with it, you know?
Yeah.
And part of it, what he said was, you have to find your true purpose in life and base everything off of that. So if your true purpose is being a parent, then do that. And everything has to come second place to being a parent.
Yeah.
Or being a magician or being a pro wrestler. Or in my case, loving girls.
Yeah.
And when I accepted that, it was as though everything else in my life fell into place. It's the strangest thing. It really is. And part of it is me being mindful. Now, I've been doing all this mindfulness meditation and stuff like that. That seems to have helped as well. But it's like you said, it's about owning who you are irrespective. Because for me, I always felt if I'm just saying, I love girls, I'm that guy who just fucks girls. And it's got nothing to do with that at all. Honestly, I'm happy just spending an evening with a beautiful girl, just talking to her.
Yeah,
I don't need to do anything.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
Like, absolutely.
The difficulty is that I love girls, and therefore loving one girl kind of problematic. But that kind of speaks to what we discussed at the castle, because when I first met you and got to know you, you obviously came across as a lovely fella, and I always would have pegged you as being, you know, traditional in your worldview and monogamous.
I wish we could tell my mom that.
And there's nothing wrong with being that or anything else. You know? Yeah. As you know from listening to the podcast, I'm not trying to espouse one view over any other. I'm just saying there should be options, right?
Well, so when we first met, when you first meet me, I do have that kind of personality.
Hmm.
I view it in my own mind of just because there are things that I do that somebody could see as being taboo or somebody might be ashamed of doesn't mean I have to be an asshole. Like, I can still be that charming guy that maybe we should get into a little bit about what we were actually talking about at the castle and some of the things that I relate to.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, start me off. You grew up in Arizona, is that right?
Yeah, I grew up in Tucson, Arizona, born and raised there.
And you had a fairly traditional upbringing, mom, dad?
Just one mom, single mom by herself, never met my dad. He was never around, but he did pass away when I was 13, I believe. And then I had two other sisters that were in and out of my life. So it was a fun little house of growing up with mostly nothing but women. And I appreciate that for the fact that, like, it does give me my respect towards women, which then also does help me in come to terms with, again, owning who I am for some of my interests of sexuality and other types of things that I'm into when it comes to, like, relationships.
Right. So reasonably traditional, you know, it wasn't like your parents or your mom was a swinger or anything else like that.
Me and my sisters, we all do have different dads. And so growing up, I'm going to say the image from my mom was definitely traditional.
Uh-huh.
Later on, thinking about it and sitting down, I would say my mom had some fun. And good for her. Good for her. We, like, me and my sisters, we all have different dads. My father was a politician. And so in my mind, and I say this jokingly, I don't know any truth to it at all. And I've never had the interest of going to talk to my mom about it. Uh-huh. But I honestly do believe I was, like, the outcome of a political affair. Or so.
Wow.
Like, my dad
is. Listen to that. Fantastic.
Yeah, my dad's a politician, and my mom and dad were not together.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Do you think that has some kind of influence on your worldview or not?
To a certain degree, it does actually have an influence. So growing up in Tucson, one of the big issues that I had out there was, even though, yes, it is a very democratic town, it also is still very conservative. Their viewpoints on sex are a lot different than the viewpoints on sex, let's say, in New York City or Florida or even out here in Los Angeles, California.
Mm.
So when I started discovering sex without having a dad around, it made it a little hard for me to try to pinpoint, like, what's right, what's wrong. At the same time, I actually do appreciate it. I appreciate it because, like, my viewpoints on homosexuality is I'm very much a supporter of it.
Right.
I absolutely support it. If you are a homosexual that lives in a world of tyranny of feeling like you have to hide it, I'm the guy that's going to go out and try to actually, like, get you to be a little more open on your own terms. I don't want to push anybody to, like, come out of a closet or so. But I'm the guy that supports it, loves everybody, has no problem with it.
Yeah.
A lot of that also came from, like, cultural upbringing of my mom, who works with a lot of, like, foreign exchange students, and she always brought them around the house. So I kind of grew up outside of the country, in the country.
Yeah.
Having people from Africa come to my house for Thanksgiving or Christmas, and having an adopted, like, big brother from Albania. And I always appreciated all that.
So specifically, though, I mean, when you first started dating, when you first started going out into the world, did you pursue a monogamous traditional relationship? Did you go, okay, I want to find one girl and settle down?
Yeah.
Or you did?
Yeah. Okay. No, I did. And again, I appreciate the relationship that my mom had. At the same time, I kind of wish I grew up in a house with a dad to a certain degree. Growing up, I never knew what a traditional relationship was because I was around a single mom. Throughout my whole entire childhood, my mom didn't start actually dating. Like, there wasn't a boyfriend or so until I was probably, I want to say, maybe 12 or 11. So growing up that whole entire time, I never really saw a guy around.
Yeah.
Like, I have no problem with that. That's why I say, like, I enjoyed it, but at the same time, I also, like, would have loved to have seen the other side of it, but I can't take it back, or I can't go back in the past and try to change it or anything.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I'm a good person, and I got nothing wrong with it, and it kind of helped shape me into who I am today.
Right.
But, like, the first real girlfriend that I actually say, like, this was the girlfriend that I was proud to call my girlfriend. Like, I want to say I was probably 16 or so.
Right.
Yeah. And she's awesome. She's a good girl.
Still in your life?
To a degree, yes. Yes. Me and her husband are friends.
Okay.
I'm very proud of her that her relationship status is very minimal. And she went from me to the guy that she is now married to.
Okay.
So, and they've been married for, I think, about 12 years or so.
Right. That's great. So when did your viewpoint sort of skew from the traditional norm? And maybe it's easier to start with, where do your viewpoints lie?
When I started realizing that I was at certain times lying to certain girls, I have never wanted to cheat on anybody.
Mm.
I've never wanted to be that guy. But basically, I have two girls that come to mind that I've dated where I have lied to them and say that I didn't cheat on them. This is me now coming out saying, yes, I have cheated on them. And when I started realizing that I was becoming that asshole, it made me question, one, why did I do it? Because I didn't want to hurt them. I had nothing against them. I love them. I actually cared about them.
Sure. So why did you do it? Just opportunity or?
It was opportunity. But now what I'm discovering is it's my personal view is that there is no creature out there that actually believes in the idea of monogamy. And if you try to give me that damn penguin thing, which a lot of people say, like, no, penguins are monogamous. I'll show you the video of the female penguin and the two male penguins fighting because the female penguin's cheating on the male and stuff. And I mean
there are very, very limited examples of monogamy in nature, but you know, I think if you look at our closest primate cousins, for example, which are bonobos and chimps,
yes,
neither of them are monogamous.
No
right.
In fact, I love the fact that chimps have actually been discovered to create prostitution through their own nature. Like, that to me is awesome. Like, they will actually trade tools or favors or things with sex. And to me, there is something, why are we still in that nature? But
yeah, we're a long way from the ideal situation for sure.
Yeah.
But I think that's why it's important to have these discussions and to really examine why you feel a certain way and why you act a certain way. Like, I'm really trying to get my head around the whole notion of jealousy right now. I'm trying to understand that. I'm trying to understand why, as soon as a girl has feelings for a guy, specifically me, they come with a notion of not wanting to share me.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it comes from a fear of loss.
Yeah.
That if I'm with somebody else, I'll feel less for them and potentially I will lose them as well. There is the sexual health issue as well.
Yeah.
But I think it goes deeper than that. I was thinking today as I was driving, we were talking about sexual health, and you would sleep with someone knowing that they'd slept with 10 people in the past. Mm-hmm. So from a sexual health standpoint, it should be pretty much the same whether they continue to sleep with those same 10 people.
Yeah.
Or they did it in the past. I mean, yes, you can get tested, and if they're clean and they don't sleep with anybody else, then yes, you've got more of a safe bet. I get that 100%. But in the grand scheme of things, is it that big of a difference if you're wearing protection anyway? I don't know. I don't think it's that big of a deal. For me, I think it's something deeper than that. I think it comes back to something that we're told from day one, that if you love someone, you don't want to share them with somebody else. And if you do, then you don't really love them. And that, I think, is disingenuous. I think it's not really true as well. I just think we're a long way of getting to the stage where people can really see through what is a natural human instinct to be jealous, because we're jealous in every other sphere of our life as well. But in every other sphere of our life, we're told, well, you're just jealous. You need to get over that.
Yeah.
When it comes to sex, no, you better be jealous.
Well, no, to go back to the conversation that we had at the castle, there's a lot that I relate to when it comes to your beliefs and what I've discovered from listening to your podcast. But there are some slight differences. Now, were you saying that you could do a polyamorous relationship or so? Of like a relationship
let's try and define here, because I think some of the issues that exist with non-monogamy, polyamory, is labels. Yeah. It's semantics, because what does non-monogamy mean to you? What does polyamory mean to you? Are they the same thing? And if they're not, how are they different? Let me say this is how I perceive it, and this is what's been said to me.
Yeah.
Polyamory is the notion that you can have many deep, meaningful, loving relationships concurrently at the same time. Whereas non-monogamy means that you can have more than one sexual relationship at the same time. So people look perhaps at polyamory as being deeper relationships and non-monogamy to be less emotionally connected relationships.
Yeah.
But I don't view it that way. And I think that's the danger of placing labels on it.
Yeah,
I don't know whether we need to place labels on it. I think you should just let things be organic and be open with how you feel.
Okay, yeah, yeah. That's exactly how I feel.
Right.
Whereas I told you, I cannot do a polyamorous relationship. My jealousy does not come with sex. My jealousy comes in the form of just emotional attachment. If I'm with somebody and I'm in a full-on relationship and they get an emotional attachment to another person, then my jealousy starts to kick in.
Right.
But when it comes to sex, in my own mind, I've separated the two things, and it makes it so that it's not weird to me that if I'm sleeping with somebody, I go off and, or if I'm in a relationship with somebody and then I go off and I sleep with somebody else, I'm going back to that person that I'm in the relationship with.
That's the plan. And herein lies the danger with that, though. Because as you know, when you have sex with people, you can form emotional connections. And so can the people you're with.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So what happens at that point if either you or your person that you're in a, you know, not a polyamorous, a non-monogamous relationship with, what happens if they start to have emotions for somebody else? Do you end the relationship at that point?
It has to be looked at. I mean, honestly, I've never really actually fully been into that type of thing.
Right.
The closest thing that I did have is I was dating a girl and then in our short-term relationship of a few months, she decided that she wanted to go back to her ex-boyfriend. We met after their relationship and then she went back to that relationship, which I got nothing like against it or anything, more power to them. But I also do know that she is the type of person that could do a polyamorous relationship. Where I felt the slight jealousy and where I said I need to cut this off with her is that I don't want to be the second best. Knowing that she left and she went to him, it made me the second place, which...
Again, that's really interesting to me.
Yeah, like the sex was a totally separate thing.
I don't care being second place.
Really?
It doesn't bother me in the slightest. Yeah. But because to me...
You know your self-worth. You know who you are.
Maybe it's that.
Yeah.
But I think to me, I look at it like friendships.
Yeah.
You have friends that... you know, you're very close with, and friends that you're not quite so close with. And you know that they've got much better friends than you, but every now and again you'll hang out and you'll have a good laugh.
Yeah.
Why, once you have sex with people, does that have to change? Like, why can you not...
Well, the sex had nothing to do with this. Like, there, like the sex...
Sex had everything to do with it, because if you weren't having sex, then you'd just be friends.
No, no, I mean, if it was a full-on relationship, and let's say I was, hypothetically speaking, a eunuch, and there could be no sex. If there was a full-on relationship, and she went back to the ex-boyfriend, I would still feel like that second place, whether or not there was sex there or not. And honestly, if I didn't feel the emotional attachment that I had with her, I would have had no problem sleeping with her afterwards, because knowing that she is a very open person and that she's a, a polyamorous type of person, I would have had no problem sleeping with her. To me, it was just the emotional attachment. That was where it lied. And that's where I've always been. Like, I've suddenly discovered within the past couple years or so this question in my mind of, like, when did we get to that age where we actually labeled the two and said these two have to be meshed together, of emotional and sex, or love and sex. And yeah. why do these two things have to be together?
Well, it's because, you know, we're sold on it. And arguably we've been sold on it since Shakespeare was probably yeah. the first person that started talking about this romantic ideal of monogamy for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
But even, it's really only been the last 100 years where the romantic notion of a lifelong marriage was ever really traditional.
Yeah.
More often than not, it was money, it was prestige, it was class.
Yeah.
Most oftentimes, that notion of romantic love for the rest of your life didn't really exist. Now, here's the interesting thing to me. I think most girls would probably say the same thing as you.
Yeah.
Not exactly the same thing, in the sense that once they'd had that emotional connection to somebody, they didn't want to have sexual connections with anybody else.
Well, that's where even I'm different. When I have that emotional connection with somebody,
uh-huh.
and I've had that emotional connection a few times.
Yeah.
But when it's there, that's where I ran into the problem of cheating. And that's where I suddenly discovered, yes, I love this person. I want to be with this person.
Right.
But I also want to sleep with this person.
Right. And for you, if you don't sleep with that other person who you are attracted to, who you desire, you feel unfulfilled and it's not enough for you.
To a degree, yes. Like unfulfilled, and also at the same time, just very much, even though if I don't sleep with that person, I'll have that kind of championship type of mentality in my mind of good for me, I didn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next one's going to come along.
Right.
And the next one after that's going to come along. And the next one's going to come along. I'm sitting there going, why am I becoming this champion in my mind of saying, good for me, I'm not doing it.
Mm.
When I can sit down and have a conversation with somebody, my significant other at the time, and say, this is what I'm feeling. I'm feeling like I want to sleep with this person who's coming along.
Yeah.
And testing whatever, everything's safe.
Right.
Condoms, all that.
Yeah.
This other person's coming along, but I don't want to leave you. I love you.
And this, so you had this conversation with a specific person?
Oh, I've had this conversation with a few people.
Wow. And how's it gone?
It's actually gone really, I'm single now, but all of my relationships that have ended have not ended over this factor of another person. The times that I've cheated, the two times that I've cheated on, one of them I kind of did admit to, yes, I did cheat, and it went bad long after that. Actually, the relationship went on for another year or so, and then it was just a destructive relationship that we probably should have ended it long before. But then the other one, it ended for numerous different reasons. And again, another destructive relationship that probably should have ended long before.
And that's the reality, whether you're in a monogamous relationship or a polyamorous relationship. Relationships oftentimes don't work.
Yeah.
And that's okay. It really is okay. You know, take it a day at a time and just have fun and be happy and be kind to each other.
Well, I especially love the person that I've grown into now, because I now look at it from that point of view.
Mm.
I mean, the first girlfriend, we went 5 years without chatting with each other. And it was a very harsh 5 years or so of me hating her, her hating me, I'm sure, until suddenly having this realization after 5 years, why am I mad?
Yeah.
I didn't know. I had no clue. She was married at that point. I was like, cool. Good for them. I ended up meeting her husband after I contacted her. We all kind of sat down, chatted with each other, and I feel bad for her, because me and her husband had this brief moment of when I was dating her, and then we were both comparing notes, and we just realized that there was a bromance going on. And it's I love the guy. I think she,
right.
I honestly believe, and if she does listen to this, she knows who she is. I think she picked the better guy.
Aww.
I actually, I love the guy.
That's
fantastic. He did more for her than I ever could
have.
And I think she did a better choice.
Well, then that to me is, I think, one of the tenets of polyamory, of compersion, of if you love someone, genuinely getting enjoyment from them experiencing pleasure with somebody else.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's difficult.
Yeah.
Now, why doesn't that make you feel second place?
I think time was one thing. There's still a childlike mentality. I mean, just like every full-grown adult who sits there and says, no, I'm an adult.
Mm.
No, there's still child mentality sure. in your mind. So part of it is in time for the girl who left me and went back to her boyfriend. Like, as of now, I'm even comfortable. I have no problem.
Yeah.
Her and I don't chat and we don't talk ever. Right. But in time, I'm sure there's probably going to be a day where I can actually sit down, chat with her and stuff and be right. like, hey, but everything's so, yeah, good.
You said, you know, the girl that went to her boyfriend made you feel in second place. But your girlfriend who then got married to the guy who yeah. you think's fantastic,
yeah.
you don't feel second place in that situation, no?
It was, yeah, well, there was 5 years where I did feel second place. There was that 5 years where her and I did not chat.
But
we had nothing but anger.
Then you met him and then...
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Time heals all wounds, yeah. basically, right?
For the most part, I usually tell girls right away. If I sense that there's any type of connection there mm-hmm. whatsoever... I tell them right away, this is who I am, this is what I'm into, this is my life,
right.
and one of two things are going to happen. One, you're either going to agree with it, and hopefully you're okay with it, or if you're the type of person that wants to still kind of see if this relationship will go and change me, it's going to end very miserably.
Right.
And I've had that happen. I've had the girl who, sure. who lies and say, yes, I'm great with this, and then...
You change.
Yeah, like I'm very good at reading people, and that comes with the magic.
Yeah.
And so reading people to me is like almost a second nature of being able to just sit there and even look at my own relationship and say, does she actually agree with me on this, or is she just trying to get me to either change, or is she bending her own
right.
rules and right. everything? And if you're bending your own rules, don't do it.
It's hard, though. It's hard to know yourself. Yeah. Yeah. And maybe in the early days, they feel like they're okay with that sort of relationship. But as the feelings develop, they realize, oops, nope, I got in yeah. over my head. And so that's why communication is key.
Yeah.
And, you know, checking back yes. in after a week, after a month, how do you feel? That's what we have yeah. so much difficulty with as human beings, is really to communicate our feelings as they change yeah. as well. Once you're into that relationship, whatever sort of a relationship it is, it's tough to say, well, I kind of don't feel that way anymore. We've all been there, I'm yeah. sure, you know, but it's really hard to yeah. do, for sure.
Well, and I should also add that if I am in a relationship, I'm not sleeping with every single girl that comes along.
Right.
Like, there is that type of attachment in my mind that's still set in stone, that if I do find that girl that I'm in love with, she's the first one that comes, like, to my mind. But I'm talking about, like, that rare occurrence of, like, a girl that comes along. So if there is anybody out there that I end up in a relationship with that probably listens to this, who knows, somewhere down the line, I'm not going to go off sleeping with every single girl.
That's funny. It is a notion. It is certainly a notion whenever the term polyamory or non-monogamy is thrown out there, that it's all about sex and trying to fuck as many people as you can. And it's really not yeah. at all. At least no. not for me. I've met some people who it is about fucking as many people as you possibly can. But you meet those people in the monogamous world as well.
Yeah.
It's just, and again, it comes back to the idea that probably not good putting labels and all this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But so if you were to sum it up succinctly, your worldview in terms of dating is that you want a primary partner, a girl who you feel intimately, emotionally connected with, that you share everything, but to be free to have sexual, non-emotional connections with other women if and when yeah. it happens.
Yeah, that's probably the best way to sum it up. Right. I mean, at the same time, like, I would never ask for anything for myself that I wouldn't ask for another partner.
Right, so you'd be okay with her sleeping with anybody else as well?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, right. Like, to a certain degree, like, what is it called? The Kinsey scale, I believe, is uh-huh. what it's called. The degree from, or the scale of, like, homosexuality.
You mean from gay to straight?
Yeah, or straight to gay.
Yeah, okay.
Going from that side. When I took the Kinsey scale, I usually fall within a 2 or a 3, which is very open. I mean, I'm not saying like it's full on bisexual,
uh-huh.
but I am somebody who does sit there and actually think about the idea, like, could I have sex with another guy?
Uh-huh.
Probably. Again, I'm very picky and right. stuff. I have kissed a guy and stuff. So like things like that don't bother me.
Right.
And a lot of the girls that I've dated within the past, like, two or three years or so are also adult entertainers. They're in the porn industry. And so...
So is that something that you throw out there with the notion of non-monogamy as well?
Yeah, well...
Because for me, if you meet a girl and she says, I'm bisexual, you go, yes, fantastic.
to a degree.
I would feel, and I don't know this for a fact, but I would feel that as a guy, if you say to a girl, I'm bisexual, she would oftentimes sort of take umbrage with that. And I don't know why. I think because as a straight guy, you probably feel like, well, yeah, she's going to bring lesbians home, right?
Yeah.
But as a straight girl, you would probably feel like, oh, he wants something that I can't give him, therefore he's never going to truly be mine.
I think that there is that kind of a stigma in a person's mind.
Right.
But do I agree with it? No, absolutely not. My mentality towards sex, and again, the openness of it all, is if I was the only person that a girl slept with from the age of, let's say we both turned 18 at the exact same time till the day we're like 75.
Okay.
It's going to be boring. It's going to get dry. It's going to, they're like,
you wouldn't know any difference, though, would you?
I would.
How would you know any difference if you've not slept with anybody else?
Well, true. Like, let's say I'm me and I have slept with somebody else, but she's never slept with somebody else.
Okay. Yes. Yes.
I would feel bad for her. I would honestly feel bad. And and that's where I noticed that you get a lot of like people who end up in the swinger world or so, that they discover that these are like later in their age, and they discover that this is what they're into.
For sure.
And stuff, because that, like, it took years. I mean, to be truthfully honest, going back to my like youth, I was very much that kid that was like, I want the biggest number of girls that I've slept with. Mm. I want like trophies on the walls and everything.
Right.
And I've dated bisexual girls.
Right.
They normally don't bring home girls.
Bitches.
And at the same time, when they when they do bring home girls, those girls are actually like there for them, not for you. So I've actually sat on the couch and just like had to go do something else and everything and say, good for you, like more power to you and everything.
The dream.
But I mean, at the same time, like basically everything that could be done sexually to a healthy extent, I've probably done.
Right.
I've had the threesomes with two girls with another guy involved. There are some stories that I'm kind of proud of.
But tell us one.
What's the statute of limitation? 6 years or so? Yeah, something. This is
wait a second. Let's not incriminate.
This is way over 6 years.
Interesting stuff, eh? Next week on the podcast, the second part of the interview with Crow talking remarkably openly about his sexuality.
I have had the sexual attraction towards another male of saying like Ryan Gosling. Hell yeah. That's a hot dude.
Why does everyone choose Ryan Gosling?
I like, honestly, I think he's just a good-looking guy.
He is a good-looking guy. Like, of course he is. I'll see you then. Well, that is it. Another week on this earth. Another blessing. Thank you for listening and being part of my journey. Drop me a line if you have a comment or question, or if you think you know someone who'd be a good parenting partner for me. If you like the show, help spread the word, write a review, subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher so you don't miss an episode. I will be back next week, but until then, wherever you are and whoever you're with, be kind and happy. Let love rule. Hello.